pray with me? Loving God, may the words of my mouth, may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. We all love to see eagles soaring in the sky above us. And when I read today's passage from Acts, it reminded me of a story that I heard about eagles recently. It seems that the Scottish preacher, John McNeill, liked to tell about an eagle that had been captured when it was young. And the farmer who snared the bird put a restraint on it so it couldn't fly, and then he turned it loose in the barnyard with the chickens. And it wasn't long until the eagle began to scratch at the dirt like the chickens, pecking at the ground. And the bird that once soared high in the heavens seemed satisfied to live the barnyard life of the lowly hen. And one day, the farmer was visited by a shepherd who came down from the mountains where the eagles lived. And seeing the eagle, the shepherd said to the farmer, "Oh, what a shame to keep the bird hobbled here in your barnyard. Why don't you let it go?" The farmer agreed, so they cut off the restraint. But the eagle continued to wander around, scratching and pecking as before. And the shepherd then picked it up and set it on a high wall. And for the first time in months, the eagle saw the grand expanse of the blue sky and the glowing sun. And it spread its wings and with a leap soared off into a tremendous spiral flight, up and up and up. At last, it was acting like an eagle again. I want you to think of that story as I share the rest of my sermon with you. Paul and Silas quite possibly knew that they were dealing with some powerful forces when they were dealing with the slave girl who we would call a spiritualist. Now, maybe to help you understand, I think probably the closest thing we have to it today is imagine the Long Island medium being held as a slave. And it's quite possible that they knew she was making money for somebody. And in a capitalist arrangement, you don't mess with the moneymakers, because people get quite angry. In prison, when the doors burst open, Paul and Silas did not run, but stayed and proclaimed the gospel and brought the jailer and his family into the faith, the family of faith. And this story reminds us that not only are there powerful forces in the world, but it reminds us that God can effect great power and great change and hope even in the face of those powerful forces. However, and this is a big however, for that to happen, God needs faithful people to step up and stand in the breach, as I like to say. God needs people to live life differently than the ways of power dictate. God needs people to demonstrate a new quality of life. In every confirmation series that I lead, we always spend one entire session on that, demonstrating a new quality of life. I do it because it's vitally important not only to God, but to us as disciples. In 1987, George Gallup of the Gallup Poll wrote an article entitled Vital Signs, in which he published in Leadership Magazine. And he wrote, "There's little difference in ethical behavior between the church and the unchurched. There's as much pilferage and dishonesty among the church as the unchurched. And I'm afraid that applies pretty much across the board. Religion per se is not really changing. Religion per se is not really life-changing. People cite it as important, for instance, in overcoming depression, but it doesn't have primacy in determining behavior. Perhaps you will remember, if you've heard Gandhi's words, when he was asked why he wasn't a Christian, when he lived such a Christian life. And Gandhi replied, "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." When we look at groups like Westboro Baptist Church, preachers that preach hatred of others who are different, can we blame Gandhi and people like him who see no difference? We're not demonstrating a new quality of life. So why would people choose to follow us? Paul reminds us that discipleship is hard sometimes. It often goes against the human need for security, for success, for prestige. All those things that we covet. Well, most of us. Think of it. When Paul and Silas stayed in prison, they could have been locked up again by an indifferent jailer who was more concerned with job security and keeping his and his family's future. However, Paul and Silas were very countercultural and demonstrated a wonderful quality of life that the jailer wanted for his family and for himself. There's a wonderful story that talks about this. There was a wise woman traveling in the mountains. As she was walking by a stream, she noticed a beautiful stone, and it turned out to be, it was a precious stone in the river. She picked it up and kept going. And on the way, she met a traveler who was hungry. And the wise woman opened her bag to share her food. And the hungry traveler saw the precious stone, and he said, "Ask the woman to give it to him." Well, she said, "Here," without any hesitation. The traveler left rejoicing in his good fortune. He knew the stone was worth enough to secure him for a lifetime. But a few days later, he came back to return the stone to the wise woman. "I've been thinking," he said, "I know how valuable that stone is, but I give it back in hope that you will give me something more precious." "And what would that be?" the woman asked the other traveler. "Please give me what you have within you that enabled you to give me this stone." See, the problem is we are content to let the world or others tell us how to act. By that I mean we follow the ways of the world because it's easier. To demonstrate a new quality of life is difficult because, as I said, we have to be thinking counterculturally. There's a wonderful story about President Reagan when he was young. An aunt took him to the cobbler to get a new pair of shoes made. And the cobbler asked the young Reagan, "Do you want square toes or round toes?" And Reagan thought, and he said, I don't know. And so he said, "Well, come back again in several days and you can tell me then." Well, several days later, the cobbler saw Reagan on the street. And he asked Ron, he said, "So what kind of toes do you want in your shoes? Square toes or round toes?" "I don't know." The cobbler said, "Come back in a couple of days and I'll have your shoes ready." So Ron went back a couple of days. And he found that the cobbler made him one shoe with a square toe and one shoe with a round toe. And the cobbler said, "This will teach you to never let people make decisions for you." "I learned right then and there," Reagan said later, "if you don't make your own decisions, someone else will." Imagine if Paul and Silas had listened to the prisoners. The minute the earthquake happened and all the doors sprang open, you know, they're all saying, "Let's get out of here, let's run." And if Paul and Silas had listened to that and done that, think of the opportunities they would have missed. This story probably wouldn't even be in the Bible. The Right Reverend John C. Itty, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Oregon, wrote concerning this, "The capacity to be different and to act differently because Christ is at the center of our being is one of the best means of sharing the good news. And that's what Paul and Silas did. The Church of Jesus Christ needs disciples who live the life of Christ, because only then will it become something more than children play acting. Only then can we be one with God. If we say we're Christian, then let's live like Christ. The great neurologist, psychiatrist, Viktor Frankl, the author of the famous book, Man's Search for Meaning, which came out of his experiences of living 3 years in a concentration camp, he said, "Life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but only by lack of meaning and purpose." Christ's life gives our lives meaning and purpose. Only if we strive to live and demonstrate that meaning and purpose. One of the greatest lessons my mother taught me was the, and gifts that she gave to me as well, was the gift of the phrase, "When one door closes, another one opens." That was her mantra throughout her life. After her second stroke, she was in rehab for months in Indianapolis and then in Richmond, where she lived. I became her medical power of attorney. And so I was the one she had to fight with when she wanted to go back home and live by herself in her house. And I said, "No, Mom, you can't do that." Because she couldn't remember what was out of sight. It was out of her mind. And she would forget things. And she couldn't walk as well. And there were a lot of health issues. And I can't. But I finally relented when she agreed to have a 24-hour home health aide live with her. Or have some in shifts. She got home in the very early fall. And that fall, I remember, there were several times I got a call from the home health agency. "Your mom has locked the aide out and won't let them in." And I would call Mom on the phone and let her vent, and then I would remind her that she needed this if she wanted to stay in her home. She wasn't safe unless somebody was there. And then she would limp. We'd limp. That Christmas, we brought her up here and for the holidays. And Barbara and I had been talking, and we were going to play hardball with her when she came up. We said, "Mom, you got to go into Friends Fellowship," which is a continuing care facility run by the Quakers in Richmond. And we were all set. We had the guns cocked and loaded and ready. Mom wasn't in the house, and we didn't say anything. We hadn't said anything. Mom was not in the house for more than an hour, and she said, "Oh, by the way, I'm all set to go into Friends Fellowship that next month." And you know, she enjoyed her last few years of life and made the most of it as best she could. Mom lived her mantra: when one door closes, another one opens. And we have it, so she, in that sense, she lived to her purpose, lived through the meaning that she saw in the phrase. And we have to live our lives with that same attention to purpose and meaning. In the case of us being Christians, the purpose of Christ. Christ showed us how to live our lives. And if we're to be true, then we must be willing to demonstrate that quality if we're to truly be his followers. It's not easy, but you know, no one ever said it would be. Will we fail doing it? Sure, probably lots of times. But if we make the effort, we trust that the grace of God will be with us. So the question for you and I is, will we make the effort? Or maybe another way to think of it, will we soar with the eagles or peck with the hens? Amen.